is Inauguration Day in America. Oh, yes, just after noon Eastern, Kamala Harris sworn in by Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor as the first female vice president in the history of this country, a woman of color sworn in by our first Latina Supreme Court justice on Thurgood Marshall's Bible. That is our new America. And right after that, Joe Biden sworn in by Chief Justice John Roberts, the 46th president of the United States. Pretty cool images today. A peaceful transfer of power, as our country has promised us. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am joined by NBA champ Matt Barnes down there, NBA Finals MVP Paul Pierce. Coming up, we're going to have Basketball Hall of Famer and former Senator Bill Bradley join the show to provide a little context for us for the inauguration today, plus a Phil Jackson story you are not going to want to miss. First, though, a little less than 4 years ago, Paul Pierce and I were sitting with Steph Curry at Warriors training camp. Golden State had been the first team to win a title during the Trump administration, so I asked Steph whether he wanted to go to the White House to celebrate. It's a question I frankly wouldn't have even asked over the previous two decades. After all, regardless of party, the president of this country swears an oath to protect and serve all Americans, even those he disagrees with. And athletes had always largely responded in kind, regardless of who they disagree with. But after Donald Trump ran a campaign based on divisiveness, and then as president adopted a platform that many NBA players felt was not just not inclusive of them, but actually against them, would Steph even want to go? Here is our conversation.
Behind you over there is the trophy. Normally when you win one of those things, you go to the White House to celebrate. Your coach has stood up there and said you guys are going to meet and discuss it as a team. Kevin Durant's been very open. He says, I don't want to go. What are your feelings on it?
I'm on that same tip, and obviously you don't want to rush to a decision on kind of understanding the magnitude of what this means. We have an opportunity to send a statement that hopefully encourages unity, encourages us to just appreciate what it means to be American and stand for something. So whether that's whatever your opinion is on either side, that's what we want to take this advantage of this opportunity.
I just want to be very clear. You're saying you have the opportunity to say you're standing for something by not going?
For me, yeah, that's going to be my vote when we meet with the team.
Not long after that aired on The Jump, Fox News picked it up, which means, guess who saw it? Yeah, which led to the tweet, quote, going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Stephen Curry is hesitating. Therefore, invitation is withdrawn. Which prompted LeBron a few hours later to answer Trump with, quote, you bum, Steph already said he isn't going. So, no invite. Going to the White House was a great honor until you showed up. Memories. Over the following years, we'd watch the President of the United States regularly attack various athletes, almost exclusively athletes of color. He called NFL players sons of bitches. He questioned black basketball players' intelligence. And boy, did he make it clear what he thought of female athletes. Not a single women's team that won a championship over the past 4 years was invited to the White House. Not even the wildly popular Team USA group that won the Women's World Cup. They're called Team USA America? Okay, anyway. Now, Trump did host plenty of other athletes at the White House. Personally for me, the LSU football team, using the most hallowed building in America as a dance floor for Get the Gat. That is always going to stick out. You know, it's a funny thing about athletes making White House visits. In some ways, they're just one more ceremony. But ceremonies like this are actually pretty crucial ways a country identifies its most important values. Who the most powerful person in the world chooses to celebrate helps define who deserves that American seal of approval. And that's why when Barack Obama was president, he not only invited Olympians to the White House, he actually reached back into history and invited families of African Americans, like the family of Jesse Owens, who back in 1936 was very specifically and purposely not given that presidential seal of approval. Obama also invited Paralympians, more women's teams than any previous president, and yes, of course, NBA champions. The Jump was actually fortunate enough to be invited to the final athlete visit of Obama's presidency, the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers. Remember when Obama told J.R. Smith that to get in the door he had to put a shirt on? Yeah. Once inside, he told them this.
congratulations on one of the best seasons of all time, one of the great finals of all time. And your city and your state could not be prouder of you.
Hey, how are you? Good to see you.
Can you say what these White House visits mean to you to have all these sports teams come in over the years?
It's so much fun, and it's especially great for the staff and people who work in government who are crazy fans to be able to meet the heroes and cheer them on.
Do you know any crazy sports fans?
No.
You may have noticed Joe Biden right alongside Obama there. Biden comes into office at a time when athletes in this country are the most politically active we have seen in 50 years. And Biden's brother recently told ESPN that the new president specifically wants to use that activism and use sports as a tool to unite and heal our reeling country. Biden was actually an athlete himself, a high school and briefly college football player who used sports to help him overcome a severe stutter. So it's a fitting goal, and one that at least the NBA seems willing to assist in. Right after the election, Draymond Green and LeBron James exchanged tweets about the Lakers, yes, going on an official White House champions visit. And just this morning, the Golden State Warriors released this video in support of Vice President Kamala Harris.
I am so proud to be a daughter of Oakland, California. Every little girl watching tonight sees that this is a country of possibilities. And to the children of our country, regardless of your gender, our country has sent you a clear message. Dream with ambition, lead with conviction, and see yourselves in a way that others may not, simply because they've never seen it before. But know that we will applaud you every step of the way.
Madam Vice President.
I'm not saying you gotta put this up in your office at the White House, but it'd probably be a good idea. Congratulations, blazing your own path. We're all rooting and supporting you the whole way.
Oh, this means so much to me. You guys, I will proudly, proudly display this.
You know, watching Steph right there was a pretty cool full circle moment in a through the looking glass kind of way. What a contrast to that day at training camp nearly 4 years ago. And of course, we don't know what the next 4 years are going to bring. But we do know there once again seems to be a spirit of partnership between the leaders Americans elected and the athletes so many Americans love. So, Paul, what do you think is going to change for the NBA under this new administration?
Well, I really believe now that, you know, for one, players are going to be able to go back to the White House, the champs. One thing, you saw that with Draymond and LeBron. But I think, too, there's going to be more conversations have with the NBA leaders about different initiatives that they can have within their communities and how they can help, being that the NBA is such a loud voice through all this systemic oppression that we've gone through over the last...
Hey, look, it's Paul Pierce at the White House.
And so, you know, it's going to be an exciting time just to open up those conversations again with the NBA players and bring back the tradition, because you look forward to when you become a champ to visiting the White House. It was like a final step of approval.
No, I completely agree with Paul. Obviously, that door is back open, but I think the door that's open, which is more importantly, is conversation. You know, there was absolutely no conversation between not only the NBA, but the NFL players, Major League Baseball players now. And I know, you know, doing with a lot of stuff heading into this that, you know, Biden definitely does have an open door policy. And we actually have a group going out there to meet with him at the end of March.
I was going to say, you were on the campaign trail with him. We're seeing that there.
Yeah, so like I said, that line of communication is back open. I think that's what's most important. Yeah.
And what is it that you have found, Matt, that when you have conversations with members of the administration, and you were telling us before the show, you've been on a bunch of conference calls already. Mm-hmm. You said you're going back out there in a few months. What kinds of things is the relationship between the administration and sports figures like yourself?
I think just learning our community is what they're very interested in. Like I said, I've been on a handful of calls from November up until last week. We were on a call with the Attorney General, you know, discussing what the vaccine is about and, you know, what we need to know and stuff like that. So what I like is, like I said, the communication lines are back open. They want to know what we think. They care about what we think, and hopefully we can apply that to hopefully changing, you know, starting to put this country in the right direction again.
I mean, look, bottom line, especially NBA players, WNBA players are some of the most prominent Black young men and women in this country. So engaging them and saying your community is important to us is something that hadn't frankly happened in four years. That message is a little bit different. Do you guys expect this wave of athlete activism we've seen this year to continue?
I think so. Absolutely. Like I said, I think that we understand our power in numbers now by coming together, not only athletes, but the minority community as a whole, with which they label us. We're not the minorities. We're actually the majority now. And they try to label us the minority
to
keep in our place. Right. So, we're the majority now. And I think we understand the power we have in not only our platforms, but our vote. And once you get that type of power, it's our job to keep it.
Absolutely. I mean, like Matt said, the door is open. We look to further these conversations, get out in the communities. The NBA players are role models. They're influencers, and it goes far beyond the NBA. Like you said, other sports leagues, people who are able to use their voice can now feel comfortable coming to the forefront and having these conversations under the Biden administration.
And that while people can go back and forth and be partisan on policies, that some of the main goals of this country, to treat people equally, to give people opportunity, those can be sort of some of the larger stated goals of our entire country together.
Equality,
pretty
equal
cool
footing.
And I will say, Matt, you were on the team, the Golden State team, that voted not to go to the White House.
Right.
And it does sound like the Lakers have made a decision that they do want to go to the White House. So we will see that tradition resume as well. All right, guys, coming up, Basketball Hall of Famer, former Senator Bill Bradley is going to join us to discuss the inauguration, social justice in the NBA, and his former team, the Knicks.
Just because you're a former athlete, it doesn't qualify you to be a SportsCenter anchor.
After the Olympic gold medal, the Rhodes Scholarship, 10 years with the New York Knicks, I was a U.S. Senator for 18 years.
How about any writing experience?
Well, I wrote 3 books, one on the bestseller list, and the Tax Reform Act of 1986.
But no TV writing.
Any experience in front of an audience?
Well, I gave a keynote address at the Democratic National Convention.
I meant a large audience.
Oh.
Welcome back. I am honored to welcome into The Jump former NBA All-Star, 2-time champion with the Knicks, member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, and of course, former U.S. Senator, Mr. Bill Bradley. Thank you, Bill, so much for joining us today. And I'm really sorry your sportscasting career didn't quite pan out there.
Well, only the very best make it on ESPN. I mean, you can't have your own show unless you're the very best.
I've heard that somewhere. Thank you so much. Of course, a historic day for the country. What does Inauguration Day, especially this particular Inauguration Day, mean to you?
Well, it was deeply meaningful to me. I mean, I remember George Washington said the most important election that the country will have is not the first president that is elected, but the second. Hmm. In other words, a transition of power, a peaceful transition of power. And that's what this ritual is all about. It's about going from one person to another in a peaceful way. And given the events of the previous 2 weeks, it's really deeply moving for me to see it. I'm always moved by these inaugurations. I was on the dais when Reagan was selected, inaugurated, and when Clinton was inaugurated, and out in the audience when Obama was inaugurated. So it's a deeply meaningful ritual, symbolic of a new beginning.
You mentioned the events of a couple weeks ago. Given your experience as a senator for the state of New Jersey for nearly 20 years, what was it like for you to witness the riot, insurrection, the idea that they attempted to storm and take over the Capitol on January 6th?
Well, I was appalled. I felt personally violated because I knew all those nooks and crannies in that Capitol. I worked in that chamber. In that sense, I felt personally violated. The Rotunda is kind of the secret cathedral of American democracy, and people were in it defiling it. I think all of them should be prosecuted, and it should never be tolerated again.
We saw so many sports figures speak out after that event happened. And it's interesting, there are people who say, oh, we shouldn't have politics in sports. You played during a time where you know that was frankly never true, that there weren't politics in sports. And I'm curious what you think of today's athlete, NBA athletes in particular, who have been so vocal advocating on behalf of social justice. What has impressed you about that? And how does it compare to similar efforts by players of your generation? Because, you know, the 60s and 70s, that was a time too.
Sure. Well, I'm particularly pleased by what they did in the lockdown in Orlando. Mm-hmm. You know, they took a real stand. And in taking a stand, they put themselves at risk. But Adam Silver's always encouraged players to be politically involved, mm-hmm. and they were definitely that. In our time, we were politically involved a little differently. You know, I mean, I taught school in a Harlem Street Academy, worked in the poverty program in Washington. Other players did things with schools. So it was a little different, but the same element of commitment was there.
Absolutely. We're going to ask you for any Phil Jackson stories behind the scene from that time, or should I save that for off the air?
No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah, I'll tell you a story of Phil Jackson, not from those times, but related to the Senate. Phil always tried to get his players, stimulate them in many different ways. And so one day he called me up when I was in the Senate and said he'd like to bring the Bulls to the Senate. And so it was the Senate was off that day, so the chamber was closed. And I took the Bulls into the Senate chamber, and you know where Michael Jordan naturally gravitated, right to the mm-hmm. majority leader's desk.
I'm not surprised. Nothing about that story is surprising and very gracious of you to offer that tour. You know, the NBA released video of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar receiving his COVID-19 vaccine, and the idea was to promote the use of inoculations to end this pandemic. Commissioner Adam Silver added on Tuesday, the league has at least discussed having current players receive COVID vaccines to educate and influence the public regarding its safety and effectiveness. And kind of the line the NBA would have to walk there is, are they setting a good example by doing that, or is it going to appear too much that they're jumping the line in some way? Where do you fall on that? What are you in favor of there?
Well, I think that the more we can encourage people to get the vaccine, the better we're going to be. You know, 100 million people in the first 100 days is a very ambitious goal, and people are going to have to know about where they can get the vaccine and be encouraged to take the initiative to do it. And there are some players probably who could encourage them to do that.
Absolutely. And I do want to ask you a little bit more about today's players, specifically, of course, your New York Knicks. They are off to a 7-8 start this season. Good for sixth place in the East under new coach Tom Thibodeau. How optimistic are you about this team, this season, the future of the organization?
Well, I don't pretend. Once a Knicks fan, always a Knicks fan. So I have high hopes. I'm pleased with where they are now, and hopefully we'll see where they are at All-Star time. If they're there, then maybe there's a chance to do well, better than anybody thought. But you always like to see your old team do well, particularly in New York.
That was a very political answer, Senator. I appreciate that. Last but not least, I want to know who your favorite basketball player is to watch in the NBA right now.
I like Steph Curry. I like the way he moves without the ball. I like the way he uses screens. I like the way he uses his hands to push off. And, of course, I like the shots. I mean, you know, unbelievable release from incredible range. So I watch him, and I see some of the things that he does out there that reminds me of what was really the best about the old Knicks teams.
You can hit from out there, right? Good 10 feet behind the three-point line.
Yeah, but it only counted 2 points then, Rachel.
Those were the days. Thank you so much, Senator Bradley. We are just thrilled to have you join us. Your excellent perspective on a day like today. We're grateful.
Thank you, Rachel.
All right, coming up, we will preview our huge NBA doubleheader tonight on ESPN. After some tough luck against the Celtics in past postseasons, are the Sixers closing the gap? Stick around to find out. Let's look ahead to the first game in our ESPN doubleheader, the Celtics and Sixers squaring off. First time this season tonight, guys. Boston swept Philly in the first round last postseason, as we know. Completely different Sixers team, though. Your guy Doc Rivers at the helm, a bunch of shooters acquired over the offseason. Paul, have they closed the gap on the Celtics, who are atop the East standings right now?
No, I don't think so. And the main reason I feel that way is because I don't feel like Ben Simmons has gotten any better. I mean, if you're gonna elevate to the next level and be championship contenders, it has to come from your stars. Yes, Embiid looks better. They've added coaching staff, but they're not gonna be on the court with you. They added Seth Curry, but until Ben Simmons makes that next jump, I just don't think so. I mean, we've seen Tatum get better. We've seen Brown get better. Kemba's gonna come back healthy. And so I really don't see the gap closing right there.
I think it's closed a little bit from the standpoint that I think we're gonna know what we're getting with Ben Simmons. He's around the 12, 13 point range, but he's also a triple-double guy every single night. And if Tobias Harris is the highest paid player on the team, if he can stay consistent with his scoring at about that 18 to 20 point mark, Embiid is playing really well, Seth Curry's playing really well, I think the gap is closed, but I still think Boston is a better team. And overall, I think Brooklyn is the team in the East, and we're gonna see tonight with Kyrie coming back.
That's for sure. Now, you guys have both played for Doc. He has made a real effort to, first of all, coach Tobias more the way he was coached when Tobias was with the Clippers, obviously, but also coaching Joel and talking to him about how the offense does revolve around him, and talking to Ben and saying, I'm not even going to tell you to go shoot threes. Just do what you're comfortable with. Do what you're good at. What difference does it make when Doc talks to you like that?
Well, I mean, definitely when you get new energy as a coach, when you look at a team that's kind of been stuck on the treadmill, haven't really made that leap, and you get new coaching staff, somebody that, you know, I think they believe in, who has that experience, who's won a championship, who's a player coach, mm-hmm. it can be extra motivating to your players. I mean, Doc is going to get, he's going to come with those pregame speeches that's going to help you right. try to run through
come
a wall.
Come on, that's what I was going to say. Doc is a great talker, you know what I mean? So maybe that's what those guys needed, was more encouragement. You could tell with the way Joel Embiid has been playing, you said he's coaching Tobias Harris the way he coached him and Ellie. So that's the one thing I'll give Doc. Is Doc, like Paul said, he's a great motivational
Absolutely.
And he empowers you to be the best possible you. So I think that's where they've also, you know, got a little advantage right there.
All right. So you did mention the Nets. I got to get your take in the last minute of the show here. What do you think of the Harden, Durant, now Kyrie tonight, Nets?
You know, when Kyrie wants to play, he's one of the best players in the world. He wants to come back now. He's going to have to be the one that sacrifices, because we see how good James is with the ball, how good KD is. So can Kyrie sacrifice? I think he can.
Those are good problems for the Nets.
Right.
Adding another all-star, a champ, a guy with experience. And this team is scary. I mean, before I said the Lakers are going to make the finals and I don't see anybody out East beating them, I think they have a challenge now with the Nets.
Do you feel like you're already seeing an equality there?
Yes, I am. I mean,
they're small. They're small.
If
you know, don't be surprised if you start seeing Jeff Green play more five, Kevin Durant play five, because DeAndre's their only true big guy, plus the rookie they have. But when it comes down to the stretch, it's going to be a small team. We're going to see what happens.
Good stuff on the NBA tonight. Check out ESPN. Thanks to these guys for joining me. We'll see you tomorrow.